In our last session, we saw how Asa, the Davidic king in the southern kingdom of Judah, went bad. How when God rebuked him for some misbehavior with a prophet, he responded by having that prophet thrown into prison and began persecuting other Judeans that criticized him for his ungodly behavior. And unfortunately, that's the way the rest of his life is going to go, which is about 13 more years. Now, in the northern kingdom of Israel, where we're going to focus our attention today, things are shifting once again. We went through the Jeroboam dynasty, then along came the Baasha dynasty. Well, the Baasha dynasty didn't go so well, and it is now being swept aside by the Zimri dynasty. Zimri assassinated Nadab, the son of Baasha. And this has all been within just the first 47 years of the existence of the northern kingdom of Israel. They've been through that many kings and that many dynasties because they are unstable because of their sinfulness, because they are focused on this worship, this twisted worship of God as the golden calves of Bethel and of Dan. 1 Kings 16:15 is where I want us to take up today, and I believe this is all happening in the later part of 895 BC. It says here, in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, Zimri reigned 7 days in Tirzah. Now remember, Zimri was a commander in the army, and he assassinated Elah and took over the kingdom for himself. So he is now at the capital city, acting as the new king of northern Israel. Now, the troops of northern Israel were encamped against Gibeathon, which belonged to the Philistines. Now, Gibeathon, we don't know exactly where it's at, but it seems as if it is probably right on the corner of the borders of northern Israel, southern Judah, and the Philistine territory. And so it would appear that the northern kingdom has been wanting to take over this city for quite some time. Baasha, when he became the king of northern Israel, was serving as an army commander there. So they want to take it over because it will hopefully give them a flanking position, I think, against the Israelis. It'll also give them control of the Mediterranean coastland farther south, maybe even securing them a trade route by land toward Egypt, which they developed a relationship with early in their existence. So Zimri, he used to be fighting down at Gibeathon, but now is reigning in Tirzah, and that news reaches the troops. Verse 16, the troops who were encamped heard it said, Zimri has conspired and he has killed the king. Now, Baasha, as I've mentioned a couple of times now, used to be one of the commanders of the army that had besieged Gibeathon. So his people, his supporters, his friends, if you will, are not happy that Zimri has killed Baasha's son, Elah, and taken over the throne. And they decide that they need to do something about it. Therefore, all Israel made Omri, the commander of the army, king over Israel that day in the camp. So the military at Gibeathon, former associates of Baasha, they decide that one of their own, Omri by name, should be the legitimate king of northern Israel, and that this Zimri guy should be done away with as a traitor to the northern kingdom. Verse 17, so Omri went up from Gibeathon and all Israel with him, and they besieged Tirzah. So it's going to take them a couple of days to move their army encampment up there. They surround it and cut off any supplies that can get into it, and they start damaging the capital city. And this is probably one of the reasons that the capital city will be moved very shortly to a new place. Verse 18, when Zimri saw that the city was taken, that is, they finally break through the walls, he went into the citadel of the king's house, that is the palace, and he burned the king's house over him with fire and died because of his sins that he committed, doing evil in the sight of he who is, walking in the way of Jeroboam, and for his sin which he committed, making Israel to sin. Now the rest of the acts of Zimri and the conspiracy that he made, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So that dynasty of Zimri didn't last very long at all. And he is looked at in northern Israeli history as a traitor, as a conspiracy man. And that'll come up later in one of our stories. So just kind of file his name away in the back of your head. Now, Omri is going to make a claim that he should be the new legitimate king of northern Israel. But he is not the only one that lays claim to that position. And so in this year, 895 BC, we end up with a civil war inside the northern kingdom. Verse 21, then the people of Israel were divided into two parts. Half of the people followed Tibni, the son of Ginat, to make him king, and half followed Omri. But the people who followed Omri overcame the people who followed Tibni, the son of Ginat, so that Tibni died and Omri became king. So this civil war goes on for just a few years, and each side is fighting against the other, killing people from the other side, and the goal is almost always, if you can kill the claimant to the throne from the other side, then you win. Well, Tibni's the one that loses his life. He either dies of natural causes, or he is killed in action. And so Omri becomes the undisputed king now of northern Israel. And so verse 23 says that in the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, Omri began to reign over Israel. And he reigned for 12 years. Now that's his total time. And it actually starts from when the civil war began. And that helps in our chronology. 6 years he reigned in Tirzah. So he besieged Tirzah. Zimri ends up committing suicide, burns the palace down over himself. And so Omri, there in the ruins of Tirzah, is carrying on his military operations against his rival until his rival is dead. But now, what's he got? He's got a capital city that's a mess, and a palace that had been burned down to begin with and couldn't be rebuilt because of the civil war that was going on. And he apparently thinks in his head, it's not a good idea for me to govern from this place that has had so much disaster and pain and death associated with it. So he abandons the city of Tirzah and decides to build a brand new capital. Now, that's almost like a page out of King David, isn't it? When David becomes king, he doesn't adopt Bethlehem, his hometown, as the new kingdom. He goes to Hebron and governs there for a while, but he instead finds a place called Jebus, or Salem, and it's never really had any association with being a place of governance before, and so he makes it into his capital city of Jerusalem. Well, Omri looks around his northern kingdom of Israel, and he finds a similar place that no one really thinks about as being a place of governance, a place of significance. In fact, this is the first time we hear of this place. Verse 24, he bought the hill of Shamaria. Now, that's the name that we're going to know it by, but it gets its name from the guy who owned the property. So he bought the hill of Shamaria, or Samaria, from Shemer, for 2 talents of silver. Now, a talent is about 75 pounds. So he doesn't pay tons of money for it, but it is going to become the new capital city. He fortified the hill, and he called the name of the city that he built Shamaria, after the name of Shemer, the owner of the hill. Now, because of changes in pronunciation over time, Shimron, or Shamaria, becomes the softer sounding Samaria. And from here on out, I will use that softer later pronunciation for the name, okay? Just so that you'll know about it. Now, what about Omri, this new king? It says, Omri did what was evil in the sight of he who is, and did more evil than all who were before him. So he is not an improvement. He is actually a bigger problem for the northern kingdom. Verse 26, for he walked in all the way of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and in the sins that he made Israel to sin, provoking he who is the God of Israel to anger by their idols. So Omri decides to keep the golden calf worship going. So there's a golden calf being worshipped at Dan up in the north. There's a golden calf being worshipped at Bethel in the south. These golden calves are supposed to represent the God who brought Israel out of Egypt. In reality, they are the beginnings of a unique Sumerian religion, which is going to be a deviation from the true faith of Israel, as represented by the books of Moses and by the prophets that followed him, and the city of Jerusalem and the temple built by Solomon at Jerusalem. And Omri, interestingly enough, is the name by which the ancient Middle Eastern kingdoms knew the northern kingdom of Israel. There are historical texts that refer to northern Israel as Omri land, or the land of Omri, the king. And so he is a significant anchor point for northern Israeli history. And one of the things that I think we should tie in to him right now is who his son is. we are much more familiar with his son's name. His name is Ahab or Ahab. And Omri, when he comes to power, solidifies his power in the same way many of the Middle Eastern kings did. He marries his crown prince, his heir, Ahab, to a princess from a neighboring kingdom. And that neighboring kingdom is Sidon, up on the coast of Phoenicia. And he marries his son Ahab to Jezebel, the princess of Sidon. And that is where we're going to have a whole bunch of trouble come into our story. So 1 Kings 16:27 says, now, the rest of the acts of Omri that he did, and the might that he showed, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? And Omri slept with his fathers and was buried in Samaria, and Ahab, his son, reigned in his place. So we now have this new dynasty that has a new capital city, and the second son of that dynasty, the second king of that dynasty is a player that we're going to have to talk about a lot. 1 Kings 16:29. In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, Ahab, the son of Omri, began to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. So he's a long-lived king, and he sets a lot of the precedent for the northern kingdom of Israel with its capital city at Samaria. Verse 3, Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of he who is more than all who were before him. And as if it had not been a light thing for him to walk in the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that's a reference to the golden calves at Bethel and Dan. So if that wasn't bad enough, he took for his wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. Now, Ethbaal, his name literally means that he's with Baal. Now, Baal just simply means Lord in the Canaanite language. But it is a reference to the thunder and lightning god of the Middle East, of the Middle Eastern religions. We talked a little bit about that with the Arameans, the Syrians. They knew this god as Hadad or Adad. Others will know him by other names, Bel, which is a shortened form of Baal. This thunder and lightning god is now going to become the state religion of northern Israel. And the new queen, once she becomes the new queen, because her father-in-law is dead, is going to get it into her head that all other religions need to disappear. And she will try to wipe out the belief in Yahweh, or He Who Is, and will target all the prophets and all of the worshipers of that God known as He Who Is. So Ahab goes along with all of this. We have an interesting dynamic between Ahab and Jezebel. Ahab seems to be the weaker member of this partnership. and he lets his wife make the choices as to what should happen. And we'll see that on more than one occasion. And so here it says that he took for his wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and he went and served Baal and worshipped him. So Ahab adopts Baal, or Hadad, or the thunder and lightning god of the Middle East, as his main god. And he erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. So the capital city of Samaria has a temple in it, built by Ahab, specifically devoted to his god Baal. Verse 33, and Ahab made an Asherah. Now, Asherah is the sister, consort, wife, it's kind of hard to pin down in the mythology of the Middle East, of Baal. So they come as a matched pair. Baal is the thunder and lightning god. Asherah is the queen of heaven. She is the mother goddess. She is the goddess of fertility. She's the goddess of grain. She's the goddess of the earth, the land, the crops. And so she is worshipped by putting up trees to her name and erecting poles, perhaps carved poles, in her name. While the god Baal is worshipped by putting up standing stones. So that's the pair that Ahab and Jezebel are worshipping. Baal is the male element, and Asherah is the female element. And they're not interested a bit in he who is the true God of Israel, the creator God of heaven and earth. So verse 33, Ahab made an Asherah, and Ahab did more to provoke he who is the God of Israel to anger than all the kings of Israel were who were before him. So he is the worst of the worst in the first 60-some years of Israeli history, that is, northern Israeli history, because he comes to power in 884 B.C., which was about the 58th year of Israel. And so he gets the worship of Baal and Asherah well established in northern Israel during the 880s. Now we get another little note here that's prophetically significant. Verse 34, in his days, Hiel of Bethel built Jericho. So some guy from the city of Bethel, which is northern Israeli territory, goes down to the Jordan Valley to the ruins of Jericho, which is apparently inside Israeli territory, and he rebuilds the city, either on the exact site of the ancient city or right next to it. And there was a curse that Joshua had put on the site, which comes into play because of this building activity. He laid its foundations at the cost of Abiram, his firstborn, and set up its gates at the cost of his youngest son, Segub, according to the word of he who is, which he spoke by Joshua, the son of Nun. So we're talking about this all happening more than 550 years after the time of Joshua. The prediction was whoever built Jericho back again would lose their oldest son when he laid the foundations, and he would lose his youngest son whenever he put the gates in place. So all of that happened because of the rebellion of Ahab and Jezebel and northern Israel at this time. Let's finish up with 1 Kings chapter 16, down at verse number 31 is where I want us to be. Excuse me. I got to get there myself. 1 Kings 16, 31. And actually, that's not where I want to be. My apologies. I did exactly what I was afraid I'd do. 2 Chronicles 16, verse 11. Because we're having to do this bouncing back and forth, remember. 2 Chronicles 16, 11 shifts our attention to the southern kingdom so that we can kind of talk on this when we come back tomorrow. The Acts of Asa, from first to last, are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet, and his disease became severe. So 13 years after his turning from God, he ends up with bad feet. Maybe he's got a latter form of diabetes, or maybe he's got really bad gout, or some other thing. But this disease and the pain that goes with it does not make him repent. It says, yet even in his disease, he did not seek he who is, but sought help from physicians. So he won't even talk to God. And so the indication seems to be that he will finish his life a reprobate, a rebel against the true faith. Verse 13, Asa slept with his fathers, dying in the 41st year of his reign. They buried him in the tomb that he'd cut for himself in the city of David. They laid him on a bier that had been filled with various kinds of spices prepared by the perfumer's art, and they made a very great fire in his honor. Jehoshaphat, his son, reigned in his place and strengthened himself against Israel. And so when we come back tomorrow, we're going to talk about Jehoshaphat and his relationship with the northern kingdom of Israel.